step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Hunting Beast Podcast, your source for hunting tactics, news, and stories. And now your host, Mario Traficante.
Before you start getting hardcore as a hunter, to just go out and have fun. Just go out and, you know, you see so many fathers nowadays. I run into it all the time that tell their kids they got to shoot a deer of a certain size. Or, you know, it's like, let the kid have fun. You know, and they think they got that. I expect that. Like if they come along with me on a hunt, they think that I'm going to make them make their kids hold up to some number or, you know, and I usually look at those kids and tell them, you see something you want to shoot, shoot it. Right. You know, have fun. You know, as long as I'm not what you want to shoot.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, a lot of what's out there, and this goes with any industry, a lot of the mainstream message that's out there might be skewed and wrong because there's a lot of product that's pushed. There's a lot of sensationalism that's done about the hunt. And I think younger kids, if they see a lot of that product pushing and sensationalism, they get the wrong idea. I agree with Dan. When I was younger, I spent hours and hours just hanging out in the woods, and that was my pastime. And I think when you do that, you're not doing it necessarily with the intent of studying animal behavior or studying how they use the land or hiking around to see different land features or things, but just by way of doing it, you absorb all that stuff.
If I could go back in time, one thing that I would really strive for is to redo how I took my kids hunting. It was a different time in my life, and I really pushed them.
Yeah.
Pushed them to succeed and pushed them to have results. And I would take them on hunts like James Ratslayer. I'd take him on hunts where we'd go 3 miles back in a swamp with stands on our back. He was a little guy. I mean, he was pretty small, small arms, small body. And I'd have a stand on his back with 5 sticks on it, a camera arm and crap. And, you know, and he would whine and complain. And my thing was, man up, you know, this is fun. Well, it wasn't fun.
Right.
You know, I can look back at that now. And you know, it's funny, I didn't see it then. But I'll be editing film for a video or something, and I'll see it now, and you'll see him complain or you hear him complain, and you think, wow, was that me that pushed him like that? And my message to these people would be to let that kid have fun. If you're going to go on an extreme hunt, your partner probably shouldn't be a 12 or 13-year-old kid. If you're going to go take a canoe back in the wilderness down a river where you could die, don't take your 12-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Take your buddy. He's expendable.
Yeah.
His wife might not think so, but
that's a great point and kind of an honest statement by Dan. This happens with any endeavor. If you're at a certain level as a hunter or you want to push yourself to a certain level, realize that your kid or whatever young hunter that you're working with probably might not be at that level, or they might not be game for it. And the quickest way that you can burn them out is by forcing them or pushing them outside of their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that really goes for anything. So, you know, introduce them to the stuff easy and introduce them to the stuff for the right reasons. I mean,
right. I think if you got a kid in camp and he says, you know, I don't really feel like hunting today. Fine, you don't have to hunt. Let him stay at the camp, you know, and just let him enjoy the time because those days are limited. You think about all the big bucks I killed and all the stuff I've done through the years, chasing bears and bucks and traveling to different states and hunting with celebrities and such. When I go back and I look at that, I would still give all that up for the hunts I did when I was a child, you know, with my childhood buddies and stuff and just going out and learning and exploring. And I can remember every detail of the first deer I ever shot, a little button buck. I can remember every detail of that hunt and the excitement. There's big bucks I got in the wall. When I look at my mounts, I'm like, when did I shoot that? I can't even remember it. But I can remember the details of those hunts when I was a child because they meant something.
Right.
Because they were the learning period, the exploring period. Don't take that away from your kids. Let them enjoy the hunt. It's special. Don't taint it. If they don't want to be in your little video thing or your pictures or something, just hold back and let them be them.
And there's so much, when you're out hunting, there's so much other stuff to observe. The way that birds pattern through the trees when you're in the woods, owl movement. I see more owls when I'm out in these swamps than, they're going to see raccoons, squirrels, ground squirrels, groundhogs, all this other stuff that happens and goes on. And to a kid, where that kind of stuff, honestly, you know, is typically not pushed in our mainstream TV or media, it's like a whole other world. You know, hawks coming in and swooping in on a squirrel, and you'll see a hawk or an owl come into an area that you're in. And it's weird because for 20 minutes, you don't see a squirrel moving.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he moves out and then the squirrels come out and they're moving around. So that's kind of stuff. I mean, how nature rotates through and you see that stuff play out.
One of my funnest memories is with James. And one of these days I'm going to release a video with this in it. For a few years, like when he was, 11, 12, 13, we had a rat problem at my place. When we moved in there, they had farm animals before us.
Yeah.
And they had rats from the grain and stuff. And there was a lot of rats around the place. And we didn't want to poison and kill everything around the farm. Because you poison rats and everything starts dying. The hawks, right. Everything. So we were going to try and just kill them. You know, and Jamie took that on his own as a young boy. As he wanted to hunt rats and be the rat slayer. And that's where he got his name from, the rat slayer. And I remember he shot a rat. And I was proud of him. And it was a big rat. And he was like, I got one, Dad. Look, you know. And I said, you know what? For every rat you shoot, I'll buy you a 12-pack of soda. And he goes, really? And I go, yeah. And a few hours later, he calls me outside. He goes, Dad. I go, you get one? He goes, yeah. He takes me down. There's like 20 rats piled up. And he goes, you owe me a 12-pack of soda for every one of those rats. But I got a lot of that on video and how fun it was. And I even joined in with him because that was the mentoring of the kid. That's what he wanted to do. And I joined in and it was fun. And he wanted to do that more than deer hunting. He wanted to kill those rats and find inventive, destructive ways to kill them. It was a blast, you know. But let those kids grow up. Let them discover. Let them do things on their own. If he wants to go small game hunting instead of deer hunting, they like to succeed. You go small game hunting, you're probably going to get some squirrels. Teach them to eat those squirrels when they shoot them. Teach them to harvest stuff off the land and live off of it. It's a forgotten trade. A lot of people go squirrel hunting now and throw the squirrels in the garbage can when they're done.
Right.
Which isn't fair to the squirrel or to the kid, because he's no longer going to pass that trade onto his kids. We're a dying breed. And I'm really a dying breed. I mean, I look around me now, and how it's changed now from when I was a child is sad to me. The state of hunting is going down the crapper. It's, you look at how people hunt and why they hunt now, and it just makes me sick. I mean, it's not ethically and morally sound. I mean, you turn on the TV And these guys are going to lie to you and tell you you need to buy a product in order to succeed. We talked about it before the show. I mean, I would sit at the Madison Deer Show with Andre, and all these celebrities that he knew would come and hang out with us, go out to eat with us and stuff, and they all wanted to be sponsored by Andre with his tree stands because they were the best tree stand around. And one major sponsor, major hunter that everybody would know his name, and I'm not going to say it because it wouldn't be fair to him, but he had his big tree stand sponsor, and he was trying to get Andre to sponsor him because he wanted Andre. And he told Andre, your stand's the best stand out there. I really want you as a sponsor. And he would sit there and tell us how much junk his tree stands were. And Andre sold him the stands for wholesale to help him out, but would not. And the guy would buy like 10 at a time. And he would use those stands to hunt with, and his whole team would use those stands to hunt with. And he would tell us how he would have to set the cameras up in a way that you couldn't see what stand he was hunting out of, and that later they'd come back a day or two later and film with that tree stand that sponsors them in the thing. And he'd say that stand was such a piece of crap, it made noise, it did this, it did that. But the day after, he'd tell us how bad that stand is. You'd see him on a TV show talking about how great it is. And to me, that is simply lying. And if you want to be in a show, a TV show, do you really want to be in it so bad that you have to lie to your followers, lie to the kids that believe in you, lie to the people that believe in you? This whole industry is getting tainted by that. You could say that you see football players, and you said that to me, that got the patch for what the, you know, Nike or whatever, but you don't see them stop the game and say, I wouldn't have been able to make that pass if it weren't for this glove. This glove made that pass. And if you don't buy this glove, you are not going to be a quarterback in the NFL. I get sick every time I see that. And you watch those shows and you see that. I don't think half the people in this country will watch those shows anymore. They're losing people. But the trouble is, the ones that are watching are becoming mindset that that's the system they have to use to be somebody in this industry. And I don't believe that. You look at me. When I started out, people told me, you can't do this unless you're willing to sell out to these sponsors. You can't do this unless you have a scent lock company. You can't do this unless you have a spray company. You got to get money from all those people in this industry or you're not going to make it, Dan. That's what they would tell me. And they'd say, you're going to fail. And they would say that you can't go anywhere doing the things I'm doing, following the trade I'm doing. You have to have a professional camera. You have to do well, they want to set up this guideline that you have to follow. You know what? I'm not using a professional camera. I'm not selling out to Scentlock. You know what? I'm doing better than a lot of those people that told me that crap to begin with. I release a video and I sell so many, I can't even keep up with the sales. I can't even ship them fast enough. Those guys aren't doing that. You know why? Because I'm being honest and I have my own way of doing things. You want to be somebody in this industry? Be unique. You know, be yourself. Find what you do that people want, that they want to see. Don't copy Lee and Tiffany. Don't copy Drury's. Don't copy me. Be yourself. Be somebody in this industry. And I know it's gotten a little off topic, but that's been burning at me for a while.
Well, it's a little off topic, but not from the sense that the younger hunters that you're going to get into this sport, they're going to have pressures and they're going to be marketed to and they're going to be advertised to. And I think maybe it'll make you evaluate why you really do it. If it's you and your son or another family member or a cousin, you might have to ask yourself, why do you really do it? What gets you excited about it? Because if you watch those shows and do that stuff together, you know, the kids are going to get excited about it too. So I think you got to be careful. Are they getting excited about buying that bow or having that certain hunting shirt or clothes? Is that why they're getting excited about it? Or is it truly the experience in the outdoors? And I'm not saying that, you know, we all don't have a little bit of that going on, but it's part of it. Get them into it for the right reasons. You know, be a steward of the outdoor, a steward of the land, so, and a steward of these animals that you're hunting. Because the more people that enjoy that experience and are truly in it for the right reasons outside of product and promotion and things like that, it's going to maintain access to these areas, these public areas we can hunt. And it's going to allow us to have this moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. Just recently I took a young inner city girl out on a fishing trip who's been begging me to take her. And it was a great time. It was like going back in time with myself, going back to my childhood, taking her fishing and hanging with her. She's only 11 years old, and she lives in the inner city, and she watches all these videos, so she's going to be excited as all get-go that she's being talked about. We get her up at this river, and she don't know what to expect, because she's never been really outside the city much, you know, and she's like, is this like river monsters? Is there giants in here? You know, we're catching bluegills and stuff. And I said, yeah, there's giants in here. Let's go up to the truck. And we got the carp bow out and went and shot some carp. And I actually took my prize necklace that's got all my biggest turkey spurs on it. I gave it to her. And she ended up somehow swindling my hat off me. Wore it home. To get back and see that childhood glow that has nothing tainted about it by products and by the direction this industry is going was really kind of cool. And if you want your kids to be growing up great people, great hunters, and a real asset to the sport, really truly take them back to the roots of the sport. When I grew up, I couldn't just go out and hunt deer right off the bat. You had to learn how to small game hunt and stuff first.
Right.
My first gun was a semi-automatic. I mean a bolt action, one shot, 22, because right. They wanted you to learn the principles before you learned how to spray lead.
Right.
I can remember my dad saying you get one bullet, you know, that kind of thing, you know. And I didn't get much of that because he wasn't around a lot. But I seen a lot with my friends too. And just grow those kids up right and teach them that when they're watching those shows, that is kind of tainted.
Yeah, take it for what it is. Make sure to call it out. Good. All right. Next one. Do a little pre-reading here. How to set up on beds that you find. So he goes on to say, there's a ton of info out there that easily explain how to find beds. So I immediately started finding beds last season. My struggle is, how do I set up on them? How do I hunt them? I'm in Pennsylvania Hill Country. Where do I set up the stand, etc., for a certain bed? How do I enter? How do I exit? But obviously that can't be easily answered. Also, I get hung up on old bedding. I find a great bed in the winter. By spring, it's no longer used. In spring, no longer used by summer. In summer, fall, etc. So he's finding beds during different periods, and it's a transient buck that's moving on.
Well, we should probably break this into a couple questions.
Yeah. So I think, first of all, maybe just a general, you find a bed.
Well, let's talk about Pennsylvania Hill Country.
Yeah.
I just, ironically, just had this conversation with the last people I did a podcast with. Just ironically, the same, pretty much exact question. Here's the deal. You go out in those hills of Pennsylvania. I'm assuming he's hunting hill. Did he say hill country? Because most of the public in Pennsylvania, I think it's hill.
Yeah, he called that out specifically.
Okay. So that hilly country, they're bedding on the leeward side. We know that. We know they're bedding, they're preferring little knobs or small outcroppings.
Right.
Where they can bed there on any wind. So, draw a little knob here once. Okay, so here we got some wind, right? Wind's going like this. This is downhill, this is uphill, right? So that buck's going to bed right here because that wind's blowing down, right? You put the wind like this, and he's bedding here. Put the wind like this, he's bedding here. You put the wind like this, I can't find that buck. Okay? So, you get your ideas where they're bedded. Now you got to figure out how to get them. And I think a lot of people think, okay, wind's blowing like this, he's bedded here, he's going to come out and go into that wind. Wind has no regard to how they're leaving that bed. As regard to how they're going into it, but no regard to how they're leaving it. So when I look at this area, okay, and I scout this, I'm going to be looking for trails coming out of here. I'm going to be looking for rub lines or whatever. And a lot of times in these open hardwoods, open timber areas, you're going to have notoriously multiple exits. So there's a way that they go out in several different directions. So now what you got to do is pick each one of those directions, follow them back, and you're probably going to have some difficulty finding, unless it's a really good bedding area, finding trails coming out of there, but there's going to be a trail. You got to look hard. You got to look for rubs and old rubs. It doesn't have to be a new run. They repeatedly do the same things year after year. So you get directions you're going. So now, let's say you got over
here
someplace.
I'm going to make a point here on Dan's map, just so you're not confused. This is the top view looking down at it, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So let's say you got a food source over here. F for food. Maybe it's acorns, maybe it's apples, maybe it's a cornfield. I don't know, but there's a food source up there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to look for a sign here. There's fresh sign. I'm assuming he's taking this travel road. You know, if there's some food source over here and there's not fresh sign, okay, I'm over here, right? I'm going to hunt this. So let's say you can't put any of that together. You're in the middle of timber. You don't know where the food is. You didn't do your scouting, right? But you do know that there's four ways in and out of there, right? So you want to hunt them four ways? I'm going to take my best guess and say, I think they're going this way. So I'm going to go as far back or as close as I can where I'm not in sight, sound, or scent. And I'm going to set up a stand. So then I'm going to go over here on my next one. Over here on my next one. And I'm just going to hunt my way around that bedding area until I figure something out. And sometimes it takes a season or two of hunting that spot all the way around and trying that to figure out what's going on. And I do not consider, when I hunt a spot once or twice a year, I don't consider sitting here hunting this bedding area once or twice a year. You can hunt each one of these. Just, see what I'm saying? Give it a routine. But if you get a routine when these bucks are coming out of here, if say it's October 1st, you see a buck come through over here. But then November, you see a buck go through down here, right? From then on, my early season hunts would probably be up here until I seen something different, and my November hunts would be down here, because that pattern, that food pattern, that rut pattern, that travel pattern is going to repeat itself. So, you got anything to add to that?
No.
Anything I missed?
I mean, so this is the key thing right here, the sight, sound, and scent. So in his example, he found a bed. So the logic that you broke down through your head is, what is the minimum distance from this bed to my setup, mm-hmm. where, and you mentioned this, where you're out of sight, you're out of sound, you're out of scent.
Yeah, and everybody wants me to put a number on it. They want to say, is it 100 yards? Is it 200 yards?
Depends.
Right, exactly. You want to get in this bed, or any of these beds. Say you get into one that's the closest to this spot, mm-hmm. where he might be bedded when you're in there. And you get to there, and you take a look this direction. You look up that trail. How far can you see? Can you get to that, how far he can see without him hearing you? If not, maybe you got to go a little further back.
Right.
Is your wind going to blow down there? You know, like, say he's bedded here. If you're sitting here, the wind's going to blow at him. So you're not hunting him when he's bedded here. You're hunting him when he's maybe bedded over here, and you got that just off wind.
Right.
Right? So you got to look at what you can get away with from that position. And you got to know what winds you got to hunt there on. I mean, you're not hunting her on this wind with it in your face because he's not bedding here.
Right, because remember, this is your leeward side.
Right.
And so these adjustments that you see that Dan made around this leeward point are based on how the wind is coming off his back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So he's adjusting his way around this point
based on
that wind. So, you know, a couple of things that Dan said. You find these beds, you know the wind. So you know you can't set up directly, you know, upwind from him. It's going to blow right into it. So that's that off wind scenario. So if you're here and you're getting a little bit of an off wind that's moving up, then you know that he's not going to scent you. And now then you have to worry about sight, like Dan said. So how far can he see? And then worry about sound. How quiet can you get in? Sometimes you may have to come in rain, mm-hmm. or come in high wind, because it'll cover your sound coming in.
And downhill gets even a little trickier because of thermal rise. Right. So you got to get beyond the thermal that goes up the hill.
Right. So if you're setting up like, you know, on this side of it, and you're downhill from them, and you're close enough, yeah, you're going to get...
You've got to get past that thermal movement.
Yeah, you're going to get thermals that are rising up to them, too.
And that usually means that when the slope stops and goes flat for a while, you've got to go flat for a while or start going up the next hill. Because you can't be on this hill that goes up to that buck,
right?
No matter how far it is. Because your scent will end up there in that thermal current.
Right, and the hill country bedding talks a lot about this, but it talks, as Dan mentioned, where you're setting up off to the side on these, mm-hmm. again, based on wind, but typically it involves walking a large loop around and setting up side on
or
the side.
Or under and over so you don't go upwind of them.
Yeah, because they have the advantage of sight.
Mm-hmm. One thing I will say, though,
and scent.
If these guys are having a real problem finding sign coming out of those bedding areas, keep searching, because the best, the very best, that's not to say I wouldn't hunt this. You got to hunt what you have. But keep looking, because the very, very best mature buck bedding I have in hill country and in every other terrain, you'll have heavy rub lines and trails coming out of that. If you're not finding that, keep looking. And it might be the type of area you're looking. It might be that you're concentrating on the center of this public land. A lot of the time, the biggest stuff I'm finding is in the overlooked stuff along the roads.
Yeah, and maybe we can, I'll have Dan, I'll draw a little picture here, and I'll have Dan talk about it again in this hill country setting. So you've got, so here's your top side view, your elevation point. So we'll mark, we know that there's a bed here, you know, a bed here, a bed here, all right? And let's say there is, oh, you got food over here. Let's say there's some doe beds here. So this, let's say, is thick. And let's say for purposes, Dan has the ability to access this from any direction. So first, maybe let's talk about how you see, how you've seen a buck, you know, entering or using this bed, entering the bed.
So entering it, they're going to come in from downhill. They're either going to come in like this, this, or like this, straight into the wind.
Yep. So if you've got wind coming over the backside of this hill, so this is the leeward mm-hmm. side, you know, he's gonna enter up this thing.
Yeah. This one here would probably be more like this, because he's going to go right into that wind.
Yeah, he wants a loop too.
It's going to be pretty exact going yeah. into that wind.
So now, I guess in general, he's talking about, this guy found these beds.
Mm-hmm.
So, sight, sound, and scent.
Mm-hmm.
It is probably likely that this buck can see out to this field. Potentially, I know some of the hill country spots I've hunted on, depending on the amount of foliage in mm-hmm. this area and the type of timber, because sometimes this is bigger timber, yep. they can see someone moving out here.
Yep.
So
sometimes that'll put me on his backside.
Right.
And or up on this edge, because you know what you're going to have on food if this is a field, which is looks like you're making it out to be one,
yeah,
the edge is going to be thick, but that doesn't mean you can't see into it. So I use those edges for travel. So I might get up on this corner or this corner, or maybe I can get in a little bit, or wherever I got to be, and you try to get them to get far enough to kill them, or at least get where you can see something happen. You know.
So let's just take one specific scenario to give this guy an example. All right, Dan, you got wind coming in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're assuming that your buck he's bedded on that leeward side.
Okay.
And yeah, let's say it is a earlier season hunt, so you're focusing on food source here,
mm-hmm.
and you've got a fair amount of cover in here. So,
First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to check out this food source. I'm going to walk this edge and see if there's deer coming into it. I'm not wasting a hunt unless I know there's a deer up there, or at least I can presume that there's probably one up there. So if I find sign in here that there's a good buck using it,
yeah,
okay, it's worth a hunt. Now, if I've scouted this, I'm going to have sat in that bed in spring around its radius, and I'm going to have looked and seen how far, what the radius is that he can see, you know, and done the whole sight, sound, scent thing from his bed, right? And I'm going to be beyond that radius. So if the trails come out like this, maybe I can't hunt that union, which is where a guy would want to be, because it's too close. I'm going to have to choose one of the two or bring a partner in. And with the wind blowing like that, the setup's going to be on this side or here. And one of the two of us is going to get a crack, hopefully.
Yeah.
A lot of times, too, you'll have travel going like this, and you have no idea what he's going to hear. He might even be over here someplace. You have no idea. But you have a travel pattern, and you can find that by your scouting. Say you're hunting up in here one day, and instead of taking that path that goes like this, you come in like this. Let's just see if there's any travel going through here, because you know about this bed. And that's kind of the open mind thing I got, where I'm not going from point A to point B. I'm scouting my way into spots.
Right.
You know? But every scenario is different on how to set up. And I think you got to get out of your mindset. A lot of guys, and there's been some so-called professionals saying this, and it's just not true. And I hate to call somebody out on not being true, but bucks do not leave those beds wind to back every time they leave them. They just don't do it. If it were true, I wouldn't be killing the deer I'm killing. I'm watching them get up and leave those beds. What I'm not seeing them is going into the bed without the wind to the nose. But don't confuse that. In the evening, they get up and they go to where they want to go.
They go to where they want to go.
So you just got to look.
He could get up and walk this elevation this way, or could get up and walk this elevation this way.
Right. So I'm looking for anything. Like you said before about seeing the food. Sometimes you can find a spot at the bottom of this hill where he can't see. Maybe if you come in from down here along a little creek or the next elevation line, you can get below his sight if you take a certain route in that you got to snake around and stuff and be real quiet, and you can get to a spot here. Maybe you can't get way up that tree, but you can get him here. You just have to really survey those spots. I think what happens a lot is guys get to phase one, and phase one is find the bed.
Right.
You find the bed, you're all excited. You take a 5-minute look around, you think you're set. That's just a start. You need to know how he's getting in and out of there.
That concludes today's podcast episode. Please go to thehuntingbeast.com to post any discussions, questions, or comments regarding today's podcast episode.